Hello and welcome to another episode of Freelance Up North, a collaboration between Zifferblatt and Freelance Folk. I'd like to introduce my co-host Katie. Katie is a freelance Squarespace web designer and trainer, plus she also founded Freelance Folk pop-up co-working sessions.
Thank you, Ben. And Ben, my lovely co-host, is the head of marketing at Zifferblatt, which is a pay-per-minute sitting room, co-working and event space. And they've got branches in Manchester, Media City and Liverpool. And we're doing a slightly different version of the show today from a slightly different point of view. So I'd like to introduce our guest, Nathan Oriash, who works in the marketing department at Prolific North. And he's about to launch a podcast called What Am I Doing? Which is all about how work is changing in the North. So Nathan, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and a bit about the podcast?
Sure. So as you said, I work for Prolific North now in the marketing, which gives me quite a unique access to how digital companies conduct themselves and the products they're putting out there in the North of England. Before that, I was working at a startup, and the startup really was predicated on ultimate flexibility. So there was unlimited holidays, there was work when you want, which in a way is like a freelance rhythm, isn't it? You dictate your own terms. So what was unique about that company was that everyone dictated their own terms with how they worked. So I've always been quite curious about how companies both operate, the brand they put out there, the products they put out there, and almost the operational structure of a company. And I felt like Manchester specifically was quite unique in that aspect. So I've always been quite curious about it. But recently I was given some figures at Prolific North, which really showed how unique Manchester is and the North. And it was talking solely about private equity investment in businesses in the North compared to Europe and other countries. And the North actually eclipsed the entirety of Italy, Spain and Holland.
Woo,
in terms of private equity investment in businesses. And then Manchester alone got more investment than Ireland. So all this sort of intuition I was having about work being different in Manchester was kind of actually right, in that there are huge figures pouring into the city. And I think in turn, this is sort of having a trickle-down effect, and it's changing the types of companies that are existing and the way people work within those companies. So that's what my podcast, What Am I Doing?, is going to explore. Because as we enter new working territory, we're by default encountering new obstacles. And that's why I'm really interested to speak to young directors, young professionals, and working out how they sort of traverse this new terrain.
Cool. And in terms of some of the people that you're speaking to, I mean, I know you've been, you've kindly come and offered to speak to Zifferblatt, and we're hoping to host a podcast physically. For the recordings. I mean, has anything surprised you of certain themes that are coming up? You were saying that you were speaking to people in Hull as well recently. Mm. So are you focusing on Manchester and the North, or is it specifically more Manchester?
So for practical reasons, it was kind of, to begin with, solely Manchester. But the more people I've spoken to, I've been referred to other people, and it's started to spread, like you say, to Hull. I've spoken to people in Leeds, spoken to people based in Liverpool, and of course, people in Manchester. And what is actually quite incredible, because I'm still in this sort of pre-recording phase where I'm researching. So I'm speaking to everyone who's put themselves forward, including you, Ben, which is very kind. And patterns are definitely emerging. And I can list multiple patterns, but one specifically is this idea of the personality and the force of that personality. I mentioned just now about a new terrain that's being traversed, and with regards to this personality, is a certain type of person coming who is just doing everything, accepting everything, regardless if they can do it yet, to the point where a common theme has been lots of people who have left university, entered this digital economy, and they've entered companies which weren't really ready yet in terms of online practices, and almost released full responsibility to these new recruits, to the extent where their whole social media strategy, their whole blog strategy, their whole online strategy has been outsourced to a young, raw talent. To the point where, invariably, they don't even have job descriptions. They just come in and go, you're young.
You must understand
this. You must understand this. Please take care of our internet for us. So that, and it would be, that's the point. It's quite funny. It's hilarious, but actually, it's quite harmful, because if you're you're a line manager or a senior management team, don't know what your long-term contribution is to the company, how are you meant to know? Mm. Even more so, how are you meant to know if it's your first ever job? So, but on the flip side of this, I think lots of young people entering the digital workforce today are very confident of imposing their ideas, so much so that they will just make their own companies. Mm-hmm. So regardless of speaking to people who are approaching their first year in employment in a digital company or like in marketing, or if they're running their own company, it's all part of the same dynamic. It's you enter the digital space, there's new ground to be, I guess, to be harvested, and you've been entrusted to do it. And some people have taken that trust and gone really far to open their own company, or they've completely reinvented a department within a company. So I think that's a pattern specifically, and it relies a lot on the personality of the person. Because if you're quite coy or shy, you will by default not actually succeed in that environment.
Or if you just wait to be told what to do.
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why, yes, lots of people succeed in it, but also some people want structure. They want to be told, here's your job description. You're going to come in between 9 and 5. You're going to execute these tasks. It's going to have this effect in the long run, and we'll pay you at the end of the month. Some people would like that reassurance, but then it's all about, like I say, the personality and how you react within this environment.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I think a lot of things that you're saying there, I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing so many freelancers move into digital and so many younger people, because typically, maybe 10, 20 years ago, maybe this is me being wrong, but actually a freelancer would have got a set of skills, then realised they can earn. This is what my mum did. She was employed, got a set of skills, went on her own because she wanted to earn what she was getting touted out at. But actually, you're seeing a lot of young people go freelance because, I mean, I suppose they're digital natives, but there's a lot of like work patterns that relate from digital agencies and startups to that freelance mentality, which is, we don't know. So you go and find it, like we're going to have to, we're all people, we're all trying to go and find these new spaces. You're better equipped than we are because you've got Instagram.
You've got loads of followers.
Yeah.
It is like a strange new type of gold rush.
Yeah.
Where everyone's running really fast in one direction, but what that direction is quite vague, but I mean, we can look great doing it, and that, and people can kind of charge and put a capital on that sort of style and aesthetic. And because, just as you said then, Ben, people aren't really hesitant to enter this freelance space, and that's kind of lends itself to the idea of thought leadership, which is its own discipline now, by the sounds of it, where people can be articulate, they can speak loudly, and then force a brand on people. And your personal brand as a freelancer is obviously quite important. But there's so much activity and so much space to do that, both online and offline, specifically in a city.
Yeah, it's kind of democratised the process of going and setting up your own business, hasn't it? Whereas beforehand, yeah, it was probably only a certain number of sectors were really suited to, like you say, going and getting those skills and then deciding to go and be a consultant or to go freelance after you've done it. Yeah. Whereas now, the kind of, you know, social media platforms like Medium and stuff have kind of leveled the playing field a lot in terms of actually being able to access the same people without having to go through all those initial steps, which is quite exciting as well as being potentially kind of a bit scary for people who are just kind of going straight into that.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because from working in social media, I think everyone's always said, oh, your personality is one of the most important parts of work. But for the first time, because we have this new digital space, which is all trackable, which we're working in, for the first time it's become a tangible weapon in terms of your personality. To a point is measurable in the sense that even as a freelancer, you've got a digital brand identity, and there's a new financial attribute to that now for the first time ever. And it's funny that if you're good at that, you can then be employed by other people to build their personality. And it's almost a little bit meta, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
and it's quite interesting. So
basically,
I mean,
just getting closer and closer to Black Mirror every day.
I know, yeah. If anyone hasn't seen that, Nosedive is the episode we're talking about, the influencer. So in terms of, I mean, when are you looking to launch? Any key stories of the people that you've been speaking to?
Yeah, because I think I'm entering this podcast series with my own private hypothesis, and it may be from a slightly cynical point of view. And what I'm looking for specifically is stories to either vindicate my hypothesis or ideally challenge them and make me a bit more sanguine about the whole digital space. But to highlight a couple of specific stories, I was speaking to one woman who runs a company called Mums Enterprise. She's director of that company, and it's all about helping mums get back into work, upskilling them or completely retraining them for a new career. But ultimately, it's about allowing them to work, seek reward from that work, and still be flexible enough to look after this new person sitting next to them. And what I didn't anticipate, and I was quite myopic about it, is the way how young people are challenging work rhythms and how you work, where you work and how you work, is actually having a positive effect on women and mothers getting back into work. If we are now demanding a work environment where we dictate it on our terms, and it's a collaborative conversation, it's not just someone dictating when you work and how you work. This is continuing where now mums can go to companies and they're open-minded about the idea of working 3 days a week, or they're open-minded about having 2 days at home as opposed to spending 5 days in the office. So I think that's something which I didn't anticipate, and really opened my eyes and thought, yeah, that's objectively a good thing that's happening. Conversely, I've spoken to people who were a director of a company when they were maybe 22, 23, and they received investment, which is quite shady investment. And long story short, they were effectively chewed up and spat out, and the company didn't work. The product wasn't very good, and they're now having to rebuild a career, having dedicated 3-4 years to pursuing something with the guidance which wasn't actually helpful guidance. And actually, to operate on the spectrum, those are two examples of how this new way of working and this flood of money can positively help someone and obviously negatively impact them. Yeah.
And it's so interesting that, just to pick up on the point you made about the kind of mums going back to work, we're seeing a lot more mums who are actually turning to freelancing as well, because not all of the companies are catching up as quickly, mm-hmm. and they actually recognise that the freelancing will give them that flexibility that working in full-time or part-time employment doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to hear actually that there are companies which are now starting to actually work with mothers and fathers returning mm-hmm. to work, because where I used to work about 7 or 8 years ago, it was for a small non-profit, but that was run very much like a startup. And one of my former colleagues was pregnant, and so she and the boss would sit down, and they were looking for examples of good practice of how it had been well managed, you know, a return to work, because they wanted to do it in a way that was working for both the company and for the mum kind of coming back. And they really struggled to find anything. Everything online was, here are your rights as an employee, here are your rights as an employer, here's how to take advantage of the other one, almost. And they said it was really hard. And so actually it's really heartening to hear that actually, in terms of the way things are working, that hopefully actually that is going to change. And like you say, it's opened up it's opened up people's eyes and opened up a lot of doors for people to go freelance and actually take more control of it.
Yeah. I think we're going through a transition period though, aren't we? Where people are taking a more honest, holistic view of work and what that means, and the blurring between social and work. And I mean, there's a lot written about the millennial generation at the moment about how, you know, they want beanbags and this, that and the other in an office, and that's how to make them happy. But actually, you know, it's interesting what you were saying there, where, you know, guidance is one of the big things that people forget. Like, yes, set them free, let them do what they want, but help direct that to ensure, one, it's productive, because, you know, you can be busy on social media all day and achieve nothing, or you can have a full day on it and come on leaps and bounds. So it is interesting that I think that the companies who are doing best in this space, and freelancers, are those who are able to tread that fine line between productive play and, you know, still actually working properly.
Mm-hmm. You know? And you're right, because when you come out of university, I don't think you're necessarily a fully formed human yet. I didn't feel that way. I mean, I studied totally different, to do a totally different job. I was going to be a translator. And what I didn't realise when I was doing my translation course was that basically, if you want to be a translator in the North, you have to be freelance. And we have loads of freelance translators that come to Freelance Folk. Mm. And I was about 22 at the time. And I was like, oh God, well, I can't do that. That's far too scary. And actually, it sounds like people nowadays are much more willing to take on that scary role. But do you think that people are, do you think people have higher expectations of what their work is going to give them as well? Is that what you found? Or?
I think that lots of people want to work with a purpose as opposed to work for a salary. And I think what I've seen just throughout my career, as well as what I'm going through and working with it currently, is lots of companies are really hard on pushing corporate social responsibility. So a CSR scheme. Because if you are placing bankers in central London for, I don't know, what, that 300 grand a year, and you're taking a huge cut, just to sort of make that a bit more palatable, your company donates 10% of their profit to charity. So you feel that there's a purpose behind you making all this loads of money. But that's not reserved for recruitment companies. I think everyone has that instinct now where they want to contribute something positive to society as opposed to just getting a pay packet. And I was speaking to someone last night who started at a company when she was 19, didn't go to university. And she said that she's the director of the company. She never thought that it would become a company. She started with a purpose, which slowly became a movement, which is actually now evolved into a company, which is a very organic way of doing it. But lots of people now try to do that retrospectively and shoehorn a purpose and a movement into their company.
It's like, this is what we intended to do the whole time.
It's like, I think, what was it? Starbucks or Pepsi, they put all of their marketing budget that they were going to put on the Super Bowl to a charitable cause. But no one actually knew that came from the marketing budget. They thought it came from some philanthropic place in the director's heart. But no, that's actually come out of the marketing budget.
Because it's a good story.
That's interesting. So, because you've been in and around freelancers and in this space with Prolific North, we're going to go through some of the questions and see from your perspective how you'd answer these or your perception of them. So, what events are good for freelancers in the North?
So, I was at Prolific North Live, a marketing expo that Prolific North run back in February. And yes, there were lots of exhibitors there displaying their products and services. But I actually met quite a few freelancers at the event. They were going there to speak to brands and exhibitors, work out, I guess, what their best practices, how they do things, and also try to pinpoint where their gaps are. Because obviously the freelancer knows what their skill set is.
Yeah.
And I think what was quite good about that is it's just sincere, it's a conversation. It's not you trying to develop an online strategy to court directors. The directors are right there. If you can go there and articulate yourself well and present your skill set, it's quite invaluable because everyone's there to talk to people. It's quite a good space. So events in that way, Prolific North Live was a good one. But away from that, and we were discussing just beforehand, I think any event is good. There are so many co-working spaces, there are so many cafes in Manchester, or I assume it's in most cities, where you can go and discuss a topic for the evening, or there's a meetups everywhere. And I would argue, if you were a freelancer, I would keep away from specific, obviously it's good to have a community of freelancers, but it'd be good to go to a tech event or a PR event and just speak to people there, and then you'll get a larger peripheral vision of what the market and what's happening. And you'll probably take things from them and how they conduct themselves and put it in your own situation. So I really think there's so many events going on where people are open to talk and open to discuss ideas, and you will just come with your freelance hat on and deliver a unique take in that evening.
And have you found with the people that you're talking to that, I know there's a perception that kind of millennials and the younger generation especially, they don't really know how to interact in the real world. They're so used to doing everything online and emailing and everything that actually skills are being lost, like the ability to go out and talk to people or to kind of pick up the phone and have a conversation. Are you finding that with the people that you're speaking to, that they are still wanting to go out and meet people in the real world?
I actually think the people I'm speaking to who are leading companies, that is a core part of their calendar. They will actively include it in their 9-to-5 working day. They will go to events because it does fall into this personality of, I represent this company, and there's loads of companies who offer the same service, but my personality and the brand, which is extension of that personality, is a unique thing that you're not going to get from anyone else. Mm. So delivering talks, going on to panels, going to events, that's quite a crucial part of building relationships with people. And it's specifically with people who work in co-working spaces. Because yes, you have your little silo, but these spaces have community managers who are there to maintain the integrity and the enjoyment of the community. And you have to engage with that community, because that's where your leads are going to come from if you are a business owner, to speak crudely. And so I think there's a huge appetite for not conducting conversations online. And I think I used to work in an industry where it was all about how do huge companies build an attractive employer brand to bring in recent graduates to join them, join their company. That was the premise. And all of the people I was speaking to in terms of on client side, they were all operations directors or recruitment managers. And they believed that these graduates they were trying to court, the moment they picked up the phone, the graduate actually was really receptive to that. Because strangely, they don't have phone conversations anymore. So this sort of actual piece of dialogue is strangely, this is a huge generalization, but strangely, it's a novelty. And it really stands out. It's not just a online blanket email to whom it may concern, XYZ, regards. It was a conversation. And I think that personal touch was quite crucial in that market, but I don't think it's unique to that market.
Mm. Thank you. And kind of expanding on from the physical events, are there any kind of useful networks that you would say are worth joining or being part of, both in person and also online?
So with regards to Prolific North, the Prolific North website is a hub for people to come for news updates for the creative, tech and media sectors. But they also come for jobs, and they also come to learn about specific companies through a Prolific profile. But what we're about to launch is a freelance directory. And this is going to be quite crucial because we get over 100,000 hits a month. And these hits come from senior leaders and directors and companies, because that's the content on the website is engineered towards them. By extending this website to freelancers, we're allowing all this great talent in the north of England to upload profiles and then almost like a shop window, show their skill set. And then the audience who come to our website for the industry news or for the jobs will now be able to come to find great talent to outsource the skills they lack internally in their company to great talent in the north of England. And I think that the freelance directory will be a great tool for people who are looking to find work in the north.
That's interesting. And on top of that, we know that you're not on social media, but is there anyone that you'd recommend that you've found who's specifically quite inspiring or interesting or something like that, who's good to follow?
Well, I'm quite, as I said previously, quite cynical about the digital space. And I'm quite cynical about the core of personality around people who proliferate their brand online. But what I do think is quite useful is if you can target these people, or find these people, sorry, target's quite aggressive. What I think is quite interesting is that all these freelancers, this may seem obvious, they all actually store lists on Twitter. And they're public lists, so they can have a list which says other copywriters or other art directors. And in there, you could very quickly see a whole community of people who are in the same situation as you. So I think that if you can tap into any of this community, because being a freelancer is hard. Mm. I don't have the experience of it, but the people I've spoken to, it is hard. There are huge perks in the way you can dictate the rhythm of your work, but you need some outlet. You need to connect with people who are going through a similar thing. And although I can't recommend anyone specifically, I do think it's worth trying to find these little holes and communities online to really share your experiences.
And actually finding the people who really resonate with you I think is important.
Yeah. But I do think it's important not to necessarily be too charmed by these online thought leaders.
Well, it's really easy as well. Like you say, freelancing is hard, and it's really easy to start comparing yourself to these people if you do end up kind of doing that. And actually, you've got to think, how real is it? But even, can you compare those two things? Mm. Why did you go freelance? And was it to have more time with your family, or to spend more time doing other projects and stuff. And are they doing that? You don't know. You can't compare the two. Yeah. But it can be quite demoralising if you do start doing that. So I think that's really interesting what you were saying about this kind of, I like the phrase, the cult of personality, mm-hmm. to describe that, because it's quite hard to strike a balance, I think, between, you obviously want, you know, like each freelancer wants their personality to come and shine through, but it's keeping that kind of integrity, I suppose, while you're doing it.
Yeah, sure, because we are able to track the amount of steps we take a day. We're able to very quickly calculate the calories in the meal we're eating. And this stuff that we, the way we turn it into metrics, to say the stuff we do in our spare time, doesn't stop when we get into work. It's just the context changes. So we still expect to be able to quantify through crude figures the success of our job. And it must be so difficult to determine success if you are a freelancer. So I think it is very important to, like you say, integrity, to work out what do you get reward from and how do you know when you've done a good job, mm-hmm. away from the metrics of it all, just so you can have some peace of mind. Otherwise, when do you stop?
Yeah. So the next question that we ask a lot of people is, what's their favourite tool or app that they use? Either as a freelancer or just in small businesses or business in general. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Yes, so I don't own a smartphone. So I actually don't own... I don't own a single app. I have an iPad my mum bought me in like 2009, where the only things that work on it are Words with Friends, so I can play with my mum. And have you ever heard of the Pocket app?
Yes.
Yes, a Pocket app, that's excellent. That doesn't necessarily help you in the workplace, but that's I have two apps. But in terms of, I do have a desktop when I get to work, I have a laptop. The things that I think are really important, I firstly just say what I benefit from, but also what freelancers, I'd imagine what they should ask themselves when they get this question, is Google Drive is excellent, hands down. But away from that, I use a meeting schedule tool, and I've almost become a brand advocate. I tell everyone about this tool. So it's Calendly. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, I think I said Calendly, but I don't know if that's right.
I'm incorrect. I'm wrong. but this tool, it just... Because what's so difficult is finding people's time and getting people to release their time. If you keep calling up and saying, I'm free this time, are you free this time? It can kind of get just a bit encroaching. This tool, we just send it to them and say, when you're ready, my calendar's synced up with this link. You just simply book your meeting and we can chat and have a valuable conversation. So that is excellent. It's free. So I'd say that. But when it comes to a freelancer, what I think is important is not to sort of download apps or work with apps which only support the skills you already have. I think you should really be clear with yourself and get some clarity on what you can't do. So if you are completely trash at keeping or invoicing people, really find an app that will help you maintain invoicing, or like I said, with this calendar app, if you can't organize your time and need that prompting and that reminding, get hold of an app to help that for you. Outsource what you can't do rather than using apps to support what you can do. I think that's what maybe a nice advice I'd say.
No, that makes sense. And actually with the calendar thing, I guess, if you know that other people are going to be booking it, then that makes you keep your own calendar in order and up to date, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So that's a great way of actually kind of having some accountability to your calendar. And Pocket, just kind of picking up on that, I actually do use that for work. If we're talking about the same one, it's where it allows you to save articles to read later. But what you can also use it for is organising the content. So I actually use it to keep a bit of a library of content that I might want to use on social media. So I think it actually can have a use in the workplace as well. But it works offline and allows you to read articles offline, basically. Yeah. So if you've got a commute that takes you through a tunnel, like one of my commutes does on the train, then it's great for actually catching up with reading and stuff.
So the next question is, we always ask people what are their favourite freelance fails. Are there any in your own career or any of your favourite fails that you've come across whilst speaking to all these freelancers?
I think I'll be quite sensitive to admit my failures. but I think that what I'm about to say may be similar. But I was speaking to a guy last night, and he's a freelancer. He's in his early 30s, and he has the way he's worked has changed so much over the past 10 years. But what he was saying to me specifically is that it wasn't until recently that he decided to really open up to himself the idea of being an entrepreneur with a capital E. and really being this personality and going out there, meeting people at events and maybe embellishing his skill set slightly. I guess we're all quite guilty in that sometimes, but really just being confident and not devaluing his skill set. Because I think what's quite common for people our age is that we do devalue our skill set because it's so instinctive to us.
Mm. We're almost apologetic, aren't we? And kind of lead with what we can't do rather than what we can. And actually, most of us can do a ton of stuff.
Yeah. I think that's partially due to the fact that this is the first time that you can compare yourself with every other person in the world.
No pressure.
And no one goes, oh, fuck this up today on Instagram. They go, look at this, what I've done. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, that's something that's well documented. But it is interesting that actually that fundamental of how people communicate through social media has permeated so heavily into particularly the millennial psyche, but I don't want to specifically to them. I think it's broadly people are either really good at saying they're good at things or not. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that you have to be careful because actually the people who overbulge what they're capable of often can be not as good as the people who are quiet about it. And it's interesting that you can be good at something but not good at saying you're good at something.
Yeah.
Two very different skills.
Because if you do take a job on which you're actually not qualified to do, you're only maybe, a couple, 20-minute YouTube tutorials away from doing it. We do have the ability to teach ourselves and fill our skill gaps quite quickly. So this guy was saying that specifically, I hope I'm correct in quoting this, but there's a Richard Branson book called Screw It, Do It. Which is this mentality of just do it, just say yes. And he took this and actually brought it into the way he conducted himself. And he said it actually works. He's going out there saying yes more often and not inhibiting himself or devaluing what he can potentially do. So I think in terms of a failure, back to the original question, in this context, in this circumstance, his failure was that he wasn't ready to really push himself out there and take on challenges as much in the past as he does now. And I think that to some extent, I would be similar. My approach to work has changed quite a lot. I'm a lot more confident in taking on new things. So I think that is one failure, just being devaluing yourself.
Cool. Well, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was actually taking advantage of all the kind of coffee shops and restaurants and everything that are out there in the north. Have you got any particular favourites in terms of places to go to work from or to drink from or to eat at?
So I live in Ancoats, which is obviously booming
it's
right now.
So trendy.
Yeah. never leave M4. But in there is I get nosebleed. But there's the during the Ancoats store.
Yeah,
obviously. Obviously I'd be there. But that's obviously a great space, mainly because they sell cortados. Do you like cortados?
Of course.
Yeah, not everywhere sells that. That's a great space, but not to be too flattering, but Zifferblatt is...
Stop it.
So just now, while I was waiting to come meet you guys, I was sitting there and there was two young girls, I think they were writing a script together. Or something, they're writing a script together. There was two people behind me eating a lamb kebab, playing Cards Against Humanity. And there was a guy in the corner with his Mac with a Colonel Gaddafi sticker on the front of the laptop. But I mean, that environment is so brilliant, because how often do you ever put yourself in that sort of situation? And I think everyone is open to talk in that sort of environment. But there are places, like the co-working spaces. I went to one place last week in Ancoats again called Beehive Lofts. And I went up to the top floor of a mill in Ancoats, and there's a great environment. Everyone, it's always people come through the door in these places and they're just open, come talk to me. Wherever, there are quite a lot of bars in Manchester where you go in there and it's a bit prescriptivism there, where you're not cool enough or you're not charismatic enough.
Identikit bars.
Yes.
We have suffered awfully with them in the Northern
So there's definitely those sorts of spaces, but then what's coming up, and I guess maybe like a counter to that, whether it's consciously or not, is spaces where it's just inclusive. Anyone can come here. And so I think that those environments are the best ones. Sorry, name Zifferblatt and the Ancoats store.
Ancoats store, actually, they've just launched the first regional Mancunian radio station, MCR Live, have got a little studio in it, which is great, if anyone wants to go and check it out. So thank you very much, Nathan. That was ace. So when where should we look out for your podcast? Where is it being launched?
Well, I think I'm tempted, I haven't made my mind up yet, to not actually have any social media presence at all.
Okay.
Bold. Which is probably radical. Isn't it? So I, in terms of distribution or any updates, I guess, you have to find me. My name is Nathan Oriash. You should not be able to spell that.
A challenge out there to our listeners.
But I think, I'm sure that if it's relevant to you, it will find you somehow. I'm not sure what that will be yet. But so I'm looking to start recording this month and start distributing next month.
Cool. Brilliant.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much for coming on, Nathan.
And if you would like to find us on social media, you can find us. Follow the podcast at hashtag freelance up north. You can find Zifferblatt at ZifferblattEdgeST on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and at freelance folk on the same for Katie.